Yes Man Show. We're joined by Eddie Gonzalez, the tour director of our BB Atlanta Open here in Atlantic Station. It starts on Saturday, the 20th to the 28th. It's going to be a great time down there at Atlantic Station, and Eddie's with us to talk about the tournament. Eddie, how are things going, you guys, getting ready for this tournament here starting on Saturday?
We're getting closer, JR. We'll be ready at 9 a.m. on Saturday, and I'm actually down at the practice courts as we speak. We got players arriving today, so making sure everything's ready for them. And, we're going to be ready, and it's going to be bigger and better than ever.
Yes, Eddie, I saw where you guys have a new venue. I've been watching the videos on Twitter. So if you could tell us about the new venue and what made you decide to move out to that lot behind Dillard's there, now that bigger lot out there we used to park at. Now that's the new where the courts are now. So what made you guys decide to change and go out there this year?
Well, you've been to the tournament in the past, and you saw what an intimate venue that we've had. And we tried to really squeeze every square inch into the two-acre spot where we've been, and now we're moving to what's called the Pinnacle Lot, literally 30 feet across the street that we now have 5 acres. So that gives us a lot more room for shade, air conditioning, activations, and it's really elevating the experience for the fans, for the players, for the sponsors, for the volunteers. And so even though it's only 30 feet across the street, it's going to be an entirely new experience with, as I said, just a lot more fun activations and a really cool experience for everybody.
Eddie, what's some of those they can expect? Must be more music, more autograph sessions, more time with the players and the fans and the kids' days. What can we expect from being over in the Pinnacle Lot now?
Well, everything's on one level now, so that's going to make it a lot easier to get around. It's certainly not a bad seat in the house. Start with that. Our worst seat is 15 rows from the court. You know, tickets start at $10 for our qualifying weekend. I think $29 when main draw starts, so very affordable. And then goes all the way up to, you know, some VIP all-inclusive experiences that, you know, food and drink is all included. But, Jerry, some of the new activations this year, Coca-Cola, who's a great partner of ours, who's also a partner with the Hawks and Atlanta United. So we're going to have a fun activation up there that's got some regulation-sized basketball goals that's Hawks-branded. Some soccer goals, and then some table tennis out there, a fun activation. We've also got, we're all about health and wellness and healthy active lifestyles, which is what tennis is all about. And we have a fun Wolfpack Ninja activation in which our tennis patrons can come out and climb some, the warp wall and some other things. We're going to have a fun first responder challenge one night with Atlanta Police against Atlanta Fire Department. We're going to have some food trucks on site this year. So there's just a couple of examples, some things that we're able to do now that we have the room that we did not have before.
Yes, indeed. And I'd say I'm excited for South Central. I've been reading about it. I'm so excited for it because I'm an avid tennis fan. I played tennis growing up. I played it in high school as well before I chose football. But I did play. So tennis gets me going. And, of course, you have a few of my friends in the draw. Dennis Cool is a buddy of mine. So is Donald Young, also Tiafo, and Eubanks as well, guys who I've had on the show before, guys I'm very very cool with. So the player feel you have, those young Americans is coming up and upcoming. Gotta love to have those guys come to Atlanta and Atlantic Station and show the fans what they're all about there.
You know, exactly, JR. I mean, my passion is wanting to make sure that our Americans that want to pursue a pro career in tennis have a tournament right here in Atlanta that they can pursue their dreams. And our field this year is as strong as it's ever been. We've got a nice group of veterans like John Isner, our 5-time champ. We've got the Bryan brothers, who've been ranked number one in the world 10 different times. We gave a wild card last week to Grigor Dimitrov, who was formerly 3 in the world, who's being coached by Andre Agassi, that's going to be here with us. And then we have the young guns, like you said, Francis Tiafoe, Taylor Fritz, Riley Opelka. We did give a wild card to Atlanta's own Donald Young and Chris Eubanks so they can play doubles together in the main draw in their home market. And so that way these guys have an opportunity to play in front of their friends and family. And, of course, our first night, the only men's tournament in the world that kicks off with a women's exhibition. So our Sunday showdown on July 21st has Venus Williams playing as Madison Keys, and we're sold out. I can't even give tickets to my parents right now because we have no tickets.
Oh, wow.
But that's what we call a champagne problem, and that's why we do it. We really want the U.S. Open atmosphere where it's great skyline views, great food, great drink, great people watching, and of course, great tennis.
You got that right. And Venus Williams is a legend. She's done a lot of good for the game of tennis. And also, Madison Keys has been a great player for us as well. So I know the fans will be happy to see Venus one more time and see Madison come back again and play this Sunday showdown. It was great when she came through last year. It was real fun to meet her. We had a press conference with her back there at the 12th Hotel there. So I'm telling you, Eddie, this is a great event. I've been telling my listeners about it as well, that they need to go ahead and check this out, because you don't get to see that at a men's tournament, a high-level marquee, which could be a WTA final right there in your backyard there.
Yeah, well, you're right. And, you know, so I encourage your listeners to go to bbtatlantaopen.com for more information and tickets. And like I said, tickets start at $10 all the way up to some really nice VIP experiences. And we have different themes every night. You know, we got the Venus and Madison match on Sunday night. On Monday night, we call it our Celebration of American Tennis. We've got Andy Roddick playing Atlanta's own Robbie Ginepri. And then Tuesday night is our college night, in which we actually give a wild card to a student athlete. This year, it's a Georgia Tech young man by the name of Cole Gromley. So he's what we call the Rocky Balboa of tennis. So his dream gets to come true and play for real at night as our feature match. And then Wednesday, wind down Wednesday with some fun promotions. And John Isner plays his first match that night. And so I really encourage your listeners to give us a shot if they've never been, because it's really a great value, great family entertainment, and very easy to get in and out from Atlantic Station.
And Eddie, talk about how the support from the city of Atlanta, from Mayor Cassini Reed to now Mayor Bottoms, who support you guys and give you guys the green light to do this in Atlantic Station, has been there for you since day one to try to move the tournament into the Atlantic Station and move to the city. We're in a great spot because it's a great location with great views.
Well, exactly. And, you know, I'm an Atlanta resident, living in the city of Atlanta in the state of Georgia. It's great that tennis being a global sport, with our international TV audience, our tournament is on in over 150 countries around the world. So it's really a chance for us to show what a great place that we live, work, and play in. And just on the global TV ad value, the city of Atlanta and the state of Georgia gets over $20 million in terms of global TV ad value to really put Atlanta and the state of Georgia on the global map for the 9 days that we're televised.
Yes, indeed, and the players always love it. The players you have do a great job around the community Atlantic Station. People don't know the Atlantic Station, but listen, outside of Atlanta, don't realize it. It's like a big community, Eddie, and you can see the players, whether it be get out of the E, going to walk to the club, to Target. The players are very accessible at this tournament, more than so than most tournaments, and that's what unique about it as well.
It is. I mean, a lot of times players have to, from their hotel, wherever they're staying around the world, have to drive 15, 20 minutes to go to their practice courts and maybe another 15, 20 minutes to go to the stadium. We're here, so they walk to their practice courts, they can walk to the stadium. You got the Publix and the Dillard's and the restaurants and the shops all on site, the movie theater, and it's also accessible. And that's why the players love coming. And then the fans love the, you get to see all these great players up close and personal. Just happen to be walking around the Atlantic Station venue.
And I can give examples, Eddie. I'm talking to John Isner outside of the 12th Hotel, eating with Dennis Cooley at Witch, seeing Eva Carvage at Publix, hanging, seeing Nick Kyrgios walking around Atlantic Station with his friends. So, like, I told people on the show, Eddie, about how if you just come to Atlantic Station, you may see one of your favorite players in the world, get to talk to them, get a picture with them. They're so accessible and they're so laid back and so cool and want to do it for the fans as well.
Exactly. The tennis pros are really, for the most part, very approachable. I mean, you got to understand, at the end of the day, they're people and humans too, until you see them on the court in between the lines, and you really appreciate how fast they are to cover the court, how much spin they put on the ball, and that you really need two things to be successful in tennis. You need that endurance to be able to go hour and a half, 2 hours, 3 hours, but then you also need that quick burst of speed to be able to cover the court. And like we said earlier, JR, our worst seat is 15 rows from the court, so that's like being at a courtside box at any other major sporting event.
You, get there. Right, Eddie, I'm looking forward to seeing you guys Saturday, the whole week there, man. I'm so jacked up for it and excited. Hope to see my friends as well when they get to town as well. So, Eddie, I hope my fans go out there and check you guys out, give you guys a chance. I've told them every year I've been covering the tournament, how great the tournament is, and I hope they would take our advice, both of us, and come out and see this new venue and enjoy the experience this year, 2019.
JR, thanks for having me. Appreciate all your support, and we look forward to having you out here as well. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Eddie. Have a great day, man.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hello, my name is Travis Williams, President and CEO of Academics and Athletic Consulting, focusing on educating and empowering tomorrow's collegiate athletic leaders. My passion is for the education and genuine concern and care for today's student-athlete. It's the centerpiece of my life's work. A college education, both in and out of the classroom, is a truly rewarding benefit. For more information on AAC, you can go to www.academicsandathleticsconsulting.com. Once again, www.academicsandathleticsconsulting.com. Or you can follow me on Facebook at Academics and Athletic Consulting or Twitter at Coach TWill24 or Instagram Travis L. Williams 24. Or you can call me at 404-542-607. Once again, AAC is very proud to partner with J.R. McHenry of the Boss Man Radio Show, covering sports and entertainment across the country. Please tune in weekly for informative, entertaining, and expert analysis on today's sports and entertainment topics. Thank you.
All right, folks, back in the Jar the Boss Band Show. You're joined by Solomon Ali from Red Nation Hoops out there in Houston, covering the Houston Rockets. A lot of things going on down in H-Town, as you all know, NBA landscape. Solomon, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing all right.
I hear that, man. I got to ask Charles, man. Do you feel like the Houston Rockets organization overreacted losing the Golden State in six games this year about what's been going on down there?
No, actually, I think this is the proper reaction. I mean, you just look at how they performed last season, and even at the beginning of the season, you could tell that this organization had some cracks that they had to resolve going into this offseason. I thought that there needed to be some change, if not significant change, because if you look at their rebounding all season, they were one of the worst rebounding teams all season, and at the very minimum, they had to go into this offseason and try to find a solution there. So, yeah, I don't think they overreacted. I think this is the proper reaction.
Do you feel that Mike D'Antoni will get an extension eventually, or he's on a one-year lame duck year, and if it just doesn't work out, they can move on from him and that staff as well? Because they fired a lot of coaches as well, if I recall. Roy Rogers, Jeff Bezdilik was not renewed. So do you feel like Mike D'Antoni is pretty much on a thin ice and a short leash going next year, and he could get fired in season if it doesn't go very well?
You know what's interesting? Sam Amick reported a couple of days ago that the Rockets do plan on going into the season with Mike D'Antoni on that final year. But it seems like, now this is just me, like Mike D'Antoni, his agent Warren Legarry, and general manager Daryl Morey were all in the same building at the Thomas and Mack Center in the Cox Pavilion for summer league. And they were always talking, like they're always mingling. And you just had the feeling that at some point extension talks had to be brought up at that point. Like they're all in one building. It makes sense. Like the business is like that. You're always talking negotiations, even when you're not technically in the negotiation phase. So I have a feeling that something will get worked out. But I mean, that reporting from Sam Amick, I mean, it's pretty hard to deny that there's a real possibility that they may choose to go into next summer and try to get something done then.
And Solomon, how is this coaching staff? I know you hired Elston Turner back. How's the staff standing for him getting assistants, the coaches to come fill those voids that were left by Aurora and Jeff Bezdilik there?
Well, there's been a pause in the hiring process. You noticed at Summer League, Mike D'Antoni was just getting acquainted to Elston Turner. They may make some more hires going forward, but right now I think the Rockets are just fine going pat. They got assistant coach Brett Gunnings helping Mike D'Antoni run the offense. They got Matt Brassi, who was promoted last season from the G League, and that's a pretty formidable coaching staff. They may not make much more hires beyond that. I mean, you know, things could change. Elston Turner might want to bring in his own guy. That's always a real possibility with an associate head coach. But the Rockets have left it open for him. So if he does want to make his own hires, he can.
Got you. Yeah. Now, I read a story about Vincent Goodwill. I've watched other reports about Chris Paul and James Harden. What is the truth for being on the ground there about their relationship and what really went down after Game 6? And was there really friction all year long between those guys about who needs to have the ball and how to play per their how they in their own eyes feel is the right way?
I think there was some tension there. And the extent of the extension is really where the disagreement comes from. I think there was some creative tension. I think Chris Paul wanted to move the basketball a little bit more. And I thought James Harden was perfectly fine with the way things were going. There was something happened after Game 6. That was very evident. There was just too much reporting that backed that up. Something happened between the two after Game 6. Now, as far as the full extent of that Vincent Goodwill report, I mean, if you read in that column, it said that these guys hadn't talked in 4 months. Like, that's just not true. Like I was in the locker room. I saw these guys interact all the time, whether they were talking schemes, whether they were just joking around. Like, these guys were talking. And now, that relationship could have soured towards the end of the season. Who knows? And to the extent which it soured, I don't know. I don't think Chris Paul demanded a trade. I think Daryl Morey met with Chris Paul and his representatives at some point to discuss his future. I don't think they ultimately discussed an actual trade demand. They probably discussed situations where Chris Paul would like to go. You know, like they probably talked to him about his preference. But I don't think that Chris Paul formally came out and demanded a trade. So, and the Rockets came out earlier this season and talked about how they were not thinking about trading Chris Paul. So situations changed. Obviously, nobody could have saw Paul George getting traded and the opportunity to acquire Russell Westbrook opening up. So the extent of the friction is where the disagreement lies. I think there was friction after Game 6. God knows how far that really went.
Because my thing is this. That's why when I read Vincent Goodwill's piece, I'm like, these guys made commercials together. They obviously spend time to do those commercials. They go out from time to time. They do the Chris Paul's big event with bowling. James Harden was there, of course. So I'm like, I can't see if you had that much disdain for a coworker, you would do those things. But I guess the State Farm is more of some money, I guess. But to go to his charity event for his big thing for bowling, I don't know about that. If I have a coworker I don't like, I'm not going to hang out with him if I don't have to.
Right, and if you remember, James Harden was the guy who recruited Chris Paul to come to Houston in the first place. So obviously these guys were cool at some point. And like you mentioned the charity thing. I mean, Chris Paul came out to James Harden's JH Town weekend last summer. So these guys were obviously friends off the court. That relationship could have soured at some point. But to the extent that these guys didn't talk for 4 months, that's just not true. Like that's patently incorrect. And I don't like to poke holes in another reporter's, reporting, but that detail, I think, was greatly exaggerated.
And, I've heard a former Rocket, T-Mac, Tracy McGrady, somebody I know very well, he played for the Hawks. He's talked about how Coach D'Antoni is not coaching James Harden. He's not holding him accountable. And there's tension on the roster because of other guys, because he's not held the same standard that they are. And is there any truth to what T-Mac is saying? Are guys feel that Coach D'Antoni does not coach James Harden enough, coach him hard to make him accountable for things he does on the court that's not right? So what are your feelings about T-Mac's assertion that Coach D'Antoni is not coaching James like he coaches everybody else?
I have not noticed that sort of tension from other players. I do think that I do think that James Harden and Mike D'Antoni are really tight. I think they have a great relationship. I think that it's the healthiest relationship James Harden's had with a coach in his entire career. And that's saying something. His relationship with Kevin McHale was not that close. And I think to say Mike D'Antoni gives James Harden liberties to do what he wants is putting it lightly. He gets a lot of freedom in this offense. But I don't think it's a bad thing. I mean, if you look at how the Rockets have performed offensively over the past few seasons, they've been one if not two, behind Golden State, and Golden State's an all-time offense. So they've been really, really good offensively. Now, that the style of play, in my opinion, has to change at this point, bringing in Russell Westbrook, because you can't have him standing in the corners, because he's not going to command that kind of respect as a shooter that Chris Paul did. So I think they're going to have to do some things differently, and Mike D'Antoni's going to have to get creative. Like, and Russell Westbrook and James Harden are going to have to make sacrifices by themselves, because these guys haven't had to play with a high usage player like this ever. Like, these guys are two of the highest usage rate players in NBA history. So these guys have to make major changes in the way they go about their offense.
And I'm thinking maybe putting the ball in Russ's hands more and playing James at the two, and so Russ can create open shots for James Harden, may be the best move, because if you put the ball in James' hands and Russell standing, you're not going to guard the guy. It's kind of like how the Rockets guard Draymond Green or Andre Iguodala. They don't guard him. It's Keon Steph, Durant, and Clay. So I think you have to put the ball in Russell's hands, let him create for James Harden. I know Harden might not like that per se, but sacrifice is what you have to do to win. I think that's the best option for them going forward.
Yeah, and at the very least, these guys have to be ready off the ball to do things. Like, these guys, when they're off the ball, they've been, for the past three seasons, they've been incredibly disengaged. James Harden kind of meanders off towards half court. He doesn't really he's not really ready to shoot. He's not really ready to attack closeouts. He doesn't cut, doesn't do all that stuff. Russell Westbrook, same thing, hands on his knees in the corner. Like, these guys have to do more movement off the basketball if they're going to make this work. If they don't, I really don't think this relationship's going to be that fruitful. These guys really have to change the way they operate without the basketball. Now, there's going to be some staggering. Mike D'Antoni had a strict stagger with James Harden and Chris Paul, where James Harden would start games, and they would separate the minutes out to where these guys only play like 15 to 20 minutes. But these guys, in the major minutes of the games, they're going to be on the floor together. So they have to figure that out.
And also, team cohesion, Solomon, is what I'm questioning about. Is this is because it was reported, as you know, that Eric Gordon, PJ Tucker, and Capella was all offered for first-round picks if he can clip money for Jimmy Butler. So how those guys feel coming back knowing that Daryl Morey hung them out to dry, too, to try to get Butler in there?
Yeah, it's going to be awkward. It's going to be and it's going to be interesting to see how a young guy like Clint Capella, who's never been in trade rumors before, is going to react to that. I think it's a perfectly fair criticism to wonder, to have his name thrown out in trade rumors all summer, how he's going to react to being like that and going into this season, that kind of friction within the locker room. I think Eric Gordon's going to be fine. That's a guy who's been in trade rumors his entire career. I think he's used to it. Same thing with PJ Tucker. Clint Capella is the guy to watch out for. Like, how he reacts to this is going to be a real story.
And now, Solomon, I'm looking at the roster. I'm assuming, of course, Michael only plays 8 or 9 guys. So I'm assuming off the bench you have Rivers, House, Chandler, and Gerald Green, with, of course, starting five, of course, with Clint, Eric Gordon, Russell, James, and P.J. Tucker. So what are the moves that Daryl Morey make for the roster knowing that Michael only plays 8 or 9 guys tops?
I would watch to see what happens with Iman Shumpert. I think that's the last remaining move for Houston, whatever they choose to do with Iman Shumpert's contract. Now, what's really interesting is the Rockets haven't finalized this trade to Russell Westbrook yet. So they can, they haven't even finalized their signing. So they could really add on to this trade and try to add a third team, perhaps try to take more salary back to Oklahoma City. And it's going to be interesting what kind of creative stuff that Daryl Morey is doing with that trade. And particularly going back to Shumpert, it seems like they're really, really interested in Andre Iguodala. Now, the Grizzlies want a first-round pick back. I'm not sure if they're going to get that for a 35-year-old Andre Iguodala, but the Rockets do seem to be interested. If they can try and move Shumpert's contract for Andre Iguodala in a sign-and-trade situation, that's something that I would definitely watch out for. Iguodala is still a competent rotation player, a really good wing defender. And come playoff time, those are the kind of players you need. And he's really smart. I think that's a player to watch out for. Or they could bring Shumpert back because they have his full bird rights. It makes perfect sense to re-sign him. That's the kind of move I would watch out for the Rockets the rest of the offseason. Other than that, I think they're pretty much done with the roster.
Gotcha. Well, Solomon, hey, man, you did a great job, brother. I look forward to talking to you again on the road, talking Houston Rocket basketball with you. I know you guys got a lot going on down. I love to see the Houston. Love when the Hawks come there once a year. Always one of my favorite trips is Houston, of course. Once a year we come there. Hope to see you when I'm there with the Hawks, man.
For sure. Looking forward to see you, man.
All right. Have a good one, brother.
You too.
All right, that's Solomon Ali, folks, of Red Nation Hoops.
My heart skips skipping the beat. You're not close enough, so that space between you and me, let's lose it. The way you're dancing, swaying to the music. Girl, that body and how you move it. Every time you cross my mind, girl, I lose it.
Alexa, play the Country Heat playlist.
Okay.
I don't think you know what you're doing to me. You got my...
With Amazon Music, a voice is all you need. Get tens of millions of songs. Download the Amazon Music app today.
It's maybe the night that my dreams might let me know. All the stars are closer. All the stars are closer.
Tell me what you gonna do to me. Confrontation ain't nothing new to me. You could bring a bullet, bring a sword, bring a morgue, but you can't bring the truth to me.
Alexa, play Kendrick Lamar and SZA.
Okay.
Maybe the night that my dreams might let me know. All the stars are closer.
With Amazon Music, a voice is all you need. Get tens of millions of songs. Download the Amazon Music app today.
Till the tears run down from my eyes, Lord, somebody, ooh, somebody, can anybody find me somebody to love?
Alexa, play hits from Queen.
Okay.
With Amazon Music, a voice is all you need. Get tens of millions of songs. Download the Amazon Music app today.
All right, what's back here on Joe the Boss Man Show. We're going to go out to the West Coast, talk some Laker basketball. Editor-in-chief of Silver Screen and Roll, Harrison Fagan, joins me. Harrison, I know you've been in Vegas, man. How's it going on the West Coast, man? How was Vegas? And how did you find that earthquake out there I heard about, man?
You know, honestly, the earthquake was not that as big of a thing, I guess, if you were not on the court having the mega screen like sway above you like a couple of the players were. For me, I was just in the media room. My legs started wobbling and no one else was reacting. And so I was like, okay, I was trying to remember, I'm like, did I not eat enough today? Like, did I forget to eat lunch or something? Like, what's going on? And then finally someone reacted. And so I was like, okay, it was just an earthquake. Like, I thought I was going to pass out. So it wasn't, you know, it was scary for me for a different reason.
I hear that, man. Maybe you have a good, balance. Good equilibrium, pace balance is good. Maybe that's why you didn't really feel it that much, man. You know, maybe you get good to get healthy. So I don't know what probably. That's probably what got you to do that, man.
Well, I was on the first floor too, so it's like, you know, if you're not raised up, like it shakes a lot less. Like, so the higher up you are, the more you notice it.
I hear that, man. See, I deal with tornadoes and alleged hurricane leftovers here in Atlanta, so I don't have to worry about, you know, earthquakes,
yeah,
so
yeah,
much
earthquake.
Like this one. But yeah, man, it's crazy. So tell me this, Harrison, from the Lakers offseason perspective, man, how are you feeling from Magic doing what you did last night of the season to now? How do you guys feel about the Lakers going forward?
You know, I think it's obviously been a mixed off season. I think for a lot of people, obviously it started out on a bad note for the Lakers, and it was like a lot of headlines about Magic and then accusing Rob Pelinka of backstabbing, and you had the botched coaching search and no one really knowing who was in charge. And there was like the whole cap thing with the Anthony Davis trade where people weren't sure if they even understood the cap ramifications, which was ultimately like proved false. They did understand, they just weren't able to, they went about getting max space in a different way. So it was like, obviously it was a roller coaster to get to that point, but they still were, they had a shot at Kawhi Leonard, so people were pretty happy about that. And then they were less happy when he ended up going across the hall to the Clippers. But I think after the initial like panic, like, oh, how did this happen, why would he pick the Clippers over us, I think they rebounded fairly nicely. And I think most fans have kind of come around to their off season. You know, like they signed DeMarcus Cousins for like just under $4 million, which I think is a pretty solid, like high upside signing. They got Danny Green, who should be able to space the floor for LeBron and AD. And then just overall, they seem to have learned from the mistakes they made last season on not going after enough shooting and seem to have really done that. And so, like, you know, I think obviously I don't think that you can really give them an A because they didn't execute their plan A, but they, you know, I think they probably get a B+.
No, Harrison, this is what kills me about it. That Luol Deng wave and stretch came back to haunt them to a degree, if you ask me.
Yeah, no, it definitely did. It's one of those things where, you know, I think at the time they thought that it would help them just to get out from under that, and they thought that it was a mutually beneficial thing. But you're absolutely right. That cap hole definitely, like, it didn't help them. It meant that they kind of had to figure out an alternate route to max cap space, whereas if they wouldn't have stretched Aang, maybe they could have attached an asset and traded him. But then that's, like, a whole different complication, so who knows how that would have worked out. You know, maybe he would have been in the Davis trade as salary ballast. Ultimately, we'll never know.
Yes, indeed. And now I want to start with Magic's resignation. Did anybody around the team know that was coming? Because I feel like if what we read was true, and he kind of was in and out, and how he kind of wanted to be himself and wanted to tweet his great tweets of nothing, but it's like, did anybody see that coming? And even though you got AD this summer, is that some scarring left from how he went on First Take and torched Rob Pelinka in the front office?
Yeah, you know, I do know for a fact that as far as, like, were his reasons true, I don't know. I mean, you could kind of judge for yourself, but the ESPN piece that came out from Baxter Holmes about a month after he stepped down about all kind of the stuff that was going on there and, like, how people felt about Magic inside the organization and some of the ways that he had, like, reportedly treated employees. You know, I think the fact that he knew that was coming, I think may have been a factor. Like, I think it's fair to wonder, at least, if that was a factor. And then, you know, it really has shifted, I think, the way a lot of Lakers fans, especially online, see him. Before this, it was like any questioning of Magic's competency to run the team, anything, it was like, that's a Laker legend. How dare you? He knows more about basketball than you'll ever, like, he's forgotten more about basketball than you'll ever learn. And, you know, in a lot of ways, some of that is true. And, like, all of that is true to a degree, but it doesn't necessarily mean that he's cut out to be a great basketball executive. And the second he stepped down, it was like, okay, actually, Pelinka's a genius, and Magic was holding him back. And, like, now, anytime I retweet something from Magic Johnson or whatever, I get, like, you know, 10 to 20 Laker fans in my mentions. Just I see them replying to him, because it's to me as well, just saying, like, well, like, how could you do this to us? Why would you step down like this? You screwed us. Like, all kinds of stuff. And so, you know, I think that it's definitely tarnished the way that he's viewed by at least Lakers fans online.
And also the coaching search. If I'm Frank Vogel, I'm looking over my shoulder. I know Jay Kidd's going to, I know what he'll do. He'll go to LeBron and Griffin with LeBron James to go above, you know, Frank's head. I just think Kidd would do that. But Lionel Hollins, who I know pretty well from his time in NBA TV down here in Atlanta, I know he's an old school, hard hitting kind of guy. He ain't going to go for that. And Phil and Handy ain't going to go for that either. So I feel like having Hollins and Handy kind of mitigates Jason Kidd to a degree in his shenanigans. But Frank Vogel, I feel like he's a temporary coach still in my eyes.
Yeah, I mean, I think how could you not feel like you were a little bit in danger when this other coach, like, and Frank said all nice things about Jason Kidd so far, said, like, you know, I'm happy to hire him and have him as part of my staff and all that stuff. But, you know, if we're just being real, if the front office is saying, well, we interviewed this guy for the head coaching job, but we'd really like him to be your assistant, like, Frank Vogel just saw how that worked out for David Blatt in Cleveland, where mm-hmm. the same thing happened with Tyronn Lue. And that was Tyronn Lue, by all accounts, was much less active in making that happen, whereas we've seen Jason Kidd in two separate destinations, like, attempt coups, for lack of a better term, in the front office. And so if you're Frank Vogel, I guess, like, yeah, I'm sure he's looking over his shoulder a little bit and will watch for stuff like that. But at the same time, like, you know, worst case scenario, if Jason Kidd does get him ousted, then that's a lot of guaranteed money to not work. You know, like, there are worse things that could happen than getting fired from an NBA head coaching job. Now, like, I'm sure Frank wants to coach, but at the same time, like, I don't know. This is probably why I'm not an NBA head coach, but I'd be asking Jason Kidd to go and do it.
Oh, yeah, that guaranteed money is one of a kind. Yeah, get me fired, please. Because I know.
I'd rather get paid to not work than paid to work. I'm just saying.
Yeah, because I know Stan Van Gundy told me, like, he got fired from Detroit. He was like, well, I got $7 million coming to me next year. I'm not worried about it. He was so nonchalant about it. Yeah, $7 million coming to me next year. Who cares? I got fired. Great. You know, like, I live in Orlando.
Yeah, there's, like,
all
a lot worse things than getting fired as an NBA head coach. You got, like, a decent amount of, you know, fallback money there.
You got that right. And also, do you feel that these mix and match veterans that they signed after losing Kawhi Leonard, can they mesh good? I feel like they have shooting, but I see defensive liabilities all over that roster right now.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right as far as the defense stuff. Like, it seems like they've skewed their coaching staff towards guys who mostly focus on defense, and I think it's probably for that reason. They're hoping that these guys can figure out some kind of way to scheme out a lot of these defensive weaknesses that this team is obviously going to have, because most of the guys that they signed are not for as being defensive stoppers. I do think that the guys are going to be able to mesh at least decently together. They're all saying the right things so far. And I think that the one thing that this roster has going for it in terms of getting guys to buy in on defense and play together and stuff like that is that almost all of these guys are on at least 2-year deals. So you're not going to have another situation where it's just 1 year, it's 1-year deals all across the roster. Everybody's trying to prove themselves and go out and kind of do their own thing and get paid the next summer. Where like this season, you know, you have a bunch of guys that could be here the next year, and so maybe you run into that problem the following season, but for this year at least they know where they're probably going to be next year. And a lot of them have like functional no trade clauses because they were re-signed using bird rights on 1-year deals, and so they'd have to approve it. So you're also not necessarily going to have as many trade rumors hanging over their heads and things like that. And so I think overall this is just going to be a more secure team of vets and not just a bunch of guys that feel like they're on the trade block, and you know, justifiably given how public those talks with New Orleans were last year.
Now, this is another big question. Who starts the center? DeMarcus Cousins or JaVale McGee? Because I feel like Boogie Cousins would not accept a bench role to JaVale McGee.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. And again, like DeMarcus has said all the right things, but it's easy to say the right things in July. It's a lot different to say them, you know, when you're actually not starting. And, you know, I've actually kind of come around to the idea of Cousins starting. I was thinking like originally, you know, you put McGee in there for the defense and because he's like more of a lob threat, I guess, for LeBron and other guys. But I think Cousins, you know, if he can start to regain some of his like 3-point shooting form, and you know, it's clear that him and Anthony Davis want to play together, I would think for political reasons, if nothing else, he will get a shot in that starting lineup at some point. It may not be right off the bat, but the fact that he has Rondo, LeBron, and Anthony Davis in his corner, I would think definitely can't hurt his chances at a starting gig. And he just has much higher upside than JaVale McGee, and he's 2 years removed from the Achilles tear now, which is when you start to see guys start to regain some of that form.
And I feel like you guys in LA have a great thing with the Clippers and the Lakers, the buzz. You have four of the top 10 guys in the league. Arguably could be top 5 if you want to say that, in the Staples Center 82 times a year. Well, 86 rather, if you want to count two home games, two road games with the Clippers and the Lakers. So 86 games of great basketball in that building coming up this year between those two teams there.
Sorry, say that last part again?
No, I'm saying that you had 86 games of great basketball between the Clippers and the Lakers playing home games at Staples this year. You're going to have a great year out there watching ball, no matter who team
you're scoring. No, it's going to be incredible. And you can already tell that the players from talking to them are excited about this rivalry, excited for, like, even if, you know, obviously the Clippers don't have a chance to, like, win the battle for L.A., quote-unquote, because there's so many more Lakers fans than there are Clippers fans. I think that just in terms of actually winning on the court, there is going to be a rivalry for those guys to prove that they are the best team in L.A., if not the most followed one.
Yes, indeed. Well, you know what, man? I'm looking forward to it. I know the Atlanta Hawks are we're going to still be bad next year. But at least I can look in late night on the East Coast here and watch the ball out there in Staples Center and see what's going on with the Lakers and Clippers, man, and give me some excitement because I know the Hawks are going to be bad again once more with us being so young and no vets on the roster.
Yeah, I mean, Atlanta's got a fun young group, but it's obviously, I think the Lakers will probably be better next year, but it's going to be a fun year to cover the NBA just in general. I think there are a lot of good teams out there.
You know, Harrison, I mean, I was shocked that we beat you guys on February 12th for the All-Star break. I don't know how we did it. I was shocked. Like, we actually beat them.
Yeah, I remember that was like the most. I wasn't there, but I was watching the live stream of the post game locker room on TV, and I think that was about the most dispirited and checked out that everybody on that team had looked throughout the entire throughout that entire trade saga, throughout that entire season. Was just like everybody was just kind of looking around, like, "Are you kidding me? Like, really? We're in the playoff hunt? We lost this game? Like, LeBron just sounded done with it at that point."
Yeah, and I must say, even for Hawks people, we were depressed they actually won a game. We wanted to tank. We found out tanking is not working anymore. But we was hoping they were losing for tanking purposes.
Yeah, that was not one that they wanted to lose, and they were not happy about it.
Yes, indeed. Well, Harris, we got to do this again real soon, my brother. That was fun, man. I enjoyed it. I'll talk to you down the road, man, and enjoy the West Coast, man. Come to the ATL. Hit me up. Love to have you come by studio and hang out with us, man. Talk ball with us.
I'll definitely do that, and I'm happy to jump on anytime.
All right, folks. It's Harrison Fagan here on the Boss Man Show.
Sally Beauty's new all-in-one hair color kits make it easy to color your hair at home. Get everything you need to color for beautifully radiant results. Loved by professionals, open to everyone. Sally Beauty.
All right, back in jail, the Boss Man Show. We're joined by Scott Agnes here of the Athletic, covering the Indiana and the Pacers up there in Indianapolis, an Eastern Conference, doing big things up there. Scott, back from Vegas, man. How is things going with you guys?
Yeah, things are going well, thanks. Yeah, it's kind of that recovery phase from Vegas. You're stimulated the entire time. It's really hot. And you're trying to get a lot of work done in a short amount of time. So it's good to be home, but I've really had a good time out in Vegas, which becomes the central point for the NBA world for at least this month.
You got that right. Now, Scott, I want to go back a little bit with you from last year. I feel like Coach Nate McMillan did a great job last year. So despite losing Victor, the team still stayed battling for that fourth to fifth seed in the Eastern Conference. They didn't give up. They didn't pack it in. And it shows how he coaches his team tough and hard and kept his guys engaged, even though they lost their star player.
No, I would agree with you. And first, I'd give props to the executives who brought in that type of group, because on purpose they brought in high-level character guys, team-first type guys that wouldn't allow a significant injury like that to derail them, right? But then even more so, JR, that was great about last year's team was that seven guys were in contract years. It was a key point that Nate discussed with the team during their first practice, but he never had to again. And that's telling, because so many different teams and situations you see where guys are playing for their next contract or they're hunting stats and things like that. So even that injury aside, that group really handled it well, I thought. But and you're exactly right with Nate, too, in that I thought he deserved to be rewarded for the last season and how well he kept them together. So I actually voted him the third for Coach of the Year. I was just impressed with how he got that group to rally behind Bojan Bogdanović and everybody else and play as a team. And they did have that drop-off late in the season, but that was mostly, at least in my mind, due to the schedule really ramping up and the guys just being exhausted, kind of being on overload for the last several months after having to exert themselves with Victor being down in Miami after surgery.
And Scott, also, it was going back to even a year prior, they took Cleveland to game seven and could have won if you played two here or there. They could have won that game. So
Nate, they were the better team.
Very much so.
They were the better team in that. They just, one team had LeBron and it wasn't the Pacers in that series. That's all it came down to.
You got that right. And I feel like Coach Nate has got a raw deal, I feel like, in Seattle and in Portland. But he's a damn good coach. People don't see, because he's so quiet. He doesn't promote himself. He doesn't make it about himself. People kind of don't see it unless you're really into the NBA like you and I are.
Yeah, no, he's certainly not going to promote himself. I even asked him who would he be some of his top coaches in his mind for Coach of the Year. He didn't even mention himself within the top five. Has that humility. And if you ask any of the assistant coaches or staff members, the video coordinators, the trainers, what it's like, and they're sincere. Like, he is a great man. He empowers them to do their job. He's not overbearing. He's not going to try to do it for them. He empowers everyone to succeed in their position. And for example, here's a great way to recognize that. For example, during training camp, they welcome the G League coach for the franchise in, and he's treated just like another assistant coach. He's in every meeting. He's allowed to do all the instruction he wants on the court. Some coaches would be insecure about that, right? Like, oh, another guy probably after my job eventually. No, I don't want him. This is my show. There's oftentimes in practice a little portion we're able to see, and maybe the defensive coordinator's running the show and not Nate. Nate's sitting back a little bit. So I think that's the true showing of a great coach or a great leader, in that they hire good people and they let them do their job.
And the loss of Darren Collison, Thad Young, and Bojan Bogdanovic, how do you think they will affect the team going forward before we get to the additions? But losing those three key guys to what the program Nate's built, how do you think losing them is going to affect the franchise going forward?
Not too much in that, JR. They only planned on trying to bring back Bojan, and they were after him. They had spoken out several times about Bogey was their number one priority, and he was. But everything shifted for them about 48 hours before the start of free agency. It was really wild in that Nikola Mirotic and his family decided they wanted to go back home, go back to Spain, and play overseas, which resulted in the Utah Jazz pivoting from what they were going to go after and offer Nikola. So in turn, they shifted their focus to Bojan, offered him way more than the Pacers were comfortable with, which in turn ended up being a fully guaranteed fourth year. And then turned the Pacers pivoted away from Ricky Rubio, who they were in deep discussions with, and really executed a great sign and trade, I thought, in acquiring Malcolm Brogdon from the Milwaukee Bucks. So everybody, I will say, with Darren Collison, and he threw everybody off. Nobody saw this retirement happening with him, not his teammates, not executives by the Pacers or throughout the league, even other agents. So that was a real curveball right before free agency.
Now, Scott, I was shocked when I heard the story from Brian Windhorst of ESPN that Herb Simon called the Bucks ownership and told them that they were wanting Malcolm Brogdon and they were without compensation. Because I feel like that's hurting the Pacers down the road. If by doing that, I would have just drawn up a poison pill contract and just say, hope you match it. Because I know you get signed Chris Middleton and you can't really go into tax in Milwaukee. I would have did that rather than call. But I know Herb Simon's an old school owner. He feel like they're the partners, not adversaries. So but I was like, wow. He's a better man than I would have wrote that contract, knowing that you couldn't match it because you've been in the tax.
Yeah, so that is all accurate. As it was described to me, JR, was that when the Pacers and Kevin Pritchard decided, hey, this is the guy we want to go after, and I should tell you, traditionally, Pacers do not go after restricted free agents for this very reason. It's tricky. It's kind of pitting franchises up against one another, and like you said, Herb Simon, the Pacers owner, believes they're kind of in this together. And so once the Pacers made that thought of let's try to go after Malcolm, the Bucks at that point were already calling around trying to find sign-and-trade deals. But what I was told was then Simon picked up the phone, called their ownership group and said, hey, let's do this together. What's it going to take to make this work? And unfortunately for the Pacers, the demand was it included a first-round pick. I don't mind the two second-round picks. In fact, the Pacers picked up five of them this offseason strategically for this type of reason. But it is a little price to pay for a guy a lot of us assumed would probably hit the market and be gone just because of the numbers game, like you said, with Milwaukee. There's only so much money to go around. But in turn, the two things that they did, Pacers did gain from this, I will say, JR, is they didn't have to wait out restricted free agency if the Bucks wanted to. They could have taken that full 48 hours to match, full 48 hours to let a physical go by, those sorts of things. That would delay the Pacers free agency. And then also in doing so, it helps attract, I think, other free agents down the line. So they know what they could get. And on top of that, at least they got him under contract the next 4 years. It's not a short-term deal. So if you're the Pacers, who have never really commanded a great free agent, I'm not even saying elite, a great free agent, this is worthwhile just because their options typically are not very good in free agency.
And I think on draft night, getting T.J. Warren was a great move for you guys.
I'm surprised you brought that up, JR, because nobody is talking about T.J. Warren. I think it got lost in the mix just because it was about 90 minutes before the draft.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I feel like that's going to help mitigate any loss you have with Victor being out, also with Bogey a little bit there. He can score on the wing. He can defend a 3-and-D guy. So that's what, and he's on a good contract as well. It's not too absorbent that you all can handle on your cap going forward.
Yeah, I agree with all that except the defense part. I'm not sure we can say he can defend or if he can even be a capable defender because that's my only concern with the roster at this point is who's the guy guarding that elite wing? Who's the guy guarding Kawhi, the Paul Georges, the LeBrons? Because in years past, it's been Thaddeus Young, who moved on and was expected to move on, or Bojan Bogdanovic. And right now, maybe it's a T.J. Warren, although talking to people in Phoenix, he's not really a defender, not even a willing defender, just kind of an average-type guy. But what he and a lot of these other free agent pickups bring that the Pacers lacked last year was offense. Pacers were the lowest scoring team in the postseason, 92 points per game. We all know that's not enough to get it done. And the contract, like you said, with Jeremy Lamb is excellent at basically $11 million per year over the next 3 years for him. And we saw Charlotte give up significantly more money, paying significantly more for Terry Rozier. So I like what the Pacers were able to do right there.
Well, I'm begging on my man Popeye Jones and Coach Nate making TJ defend, because I know that they are sticklers for defense. So I'm giving that them the benefit of the doubt. They are coaching them and get him some game play discipline, as my dad would always tell me when I played ball. JR, it's the game play discipline. Just play your position, yeah. Do your roles. So hopefully, and get him to at least do that at least. Hopefully.
See, and what he stands to benefit JR from here coming to Indianapolis is, for one, it's a winning organization. Like, just imagine going to your work every day or whatever it is, and knowing you're the worst at what you do, and there's no bonus in sight. Like, that'd be a tough way to go about business, where nobody's happy. You might get moved. Like, that's real life right now for the Suns, who arguably have the worst organization in the league. I mean, you probably could argue the Knicks are right there.
Mm-hmm.
But now he also comes to Indianapolis, where there's structure. And I think that will be incredibly valuable to him as well. Structure in a winning organization. And the one thing the Pacers have really done a lot, especially recently, is focusing on finding those guys in other organizations that are underutilized, that are underperforming, or that really aren't playing to their needs. And you think back to the big trade 2 years ago, and right away, Victor Oladipo and Domantas Sabonis fit that bill. The Thunder were not playing. They were playing Sabonis at the four position, which really isn't his strength, and we're maximizing him at the five. Now, the Pacers are going to experiment a little bit with that this year out of need. But I think T.J. Warren will come here and really have a chance to flourish, just like Jeremy Lamb.
And, Scott, also, I feel like Victor coming back is almost like having a mid-season trade with him coming back, because the team will be already kind of have us who they are, but you're adding this extra jolt that you didn't have at the beginning of the year. Like, almost like a trade almost when you get him back and out running up and down the court, and they impacted on offense and defensively. Just give the guys like energy boost with his great talent and play.
It very well could be, but what we don't know is what he'll look like coming back, primarily because this is a unusual injury for this type of player, right? So talking to doctors after the injury, what it is a right quad injury, a tear, ruptured quad, and it's different than DeMarcus Cousins, who we saw come back after several weeks in the playoffs, much more extreme than that. This injury doesn't often happen to people in great shape or under the age of 40. And the only real basis of information that Victor, his people, and the Pacers can go off of is Tony Parker. He suffered this a couple of years ago, this exact injury, but he was almost 10 years older at 35. So while he looks great right now, and by all accounts is ahead of schedule, has been ahead of schedule, I am proceeding a little bit with caution. Number one, because this type of injury, and number two, let's take recent history. What we saw here in Indy with Paul George, in Boston with Gordon Hayward, two other significant type injuries, and those guys really did not look themselves that first year back, but then I think they'll thrive after that first year. Paul George is in that MVP conversation. But best case scenarios, you're exactly right. It's big coming back, providing that jolt of energy and being like a midseason acquisition.
That's one I got for you, Scott. You know, Atlanta, we've redone Phillips Arena now, State Farm Arena. We've redid the whole place. Rarely you guys in Bankers Life will do it for the Bankers Life Fieldhouse as well. Redo that. So what are you guys going to be doing with the arena, making it better for the fans and for the team going forward?
Yeah, that's good research on your part right there. And I do want to get down there and check out the new State Farm Center arena, because I did not make it down there last year. But the biggest thing that they're going to be doing over the next 3 years is create more of a welcoming public type space, like we see down there at Atlanta's arena, right? In that, the ripping out some of the seats in a section and making it more like a public bar where you kind of just stand around, you're at the game, you can watch if you want, you can hang out. That's a big part of it at couple ends. And we see that more and more now, is people don't want to go to the game, sit in their seat, and that's all they want to do. And then another big thing they're working on, or they will get started here in 2 years, is outside. It's kind of a welcoming plaza, if you will. And one part will be an area that's a large area that in the wintertime can be a skating rink, and maybe during the summer times could be a basketball court or an outdoor space that can be used. So they're really trying to make it a community area where you can have a good time before the game, during the
throughout the year. And then if you want to just come to the game and casually follow, this is one way to reel people back in. It's their belief. When we have HDTV and 70-inch TV with instant replay, this is where you want to go, I think, where you can just watch the game with buddies and maybe have a drink and casually enjoy yourself. So it'll be interesting to see. I think this has become a trend throughout the league.
Oh, yeah, and I know Atlanta, we have a Top Golf in the arena, the barbershop, a courtside club.
By the way, I've heard that barbershop, or at least the barber in there, really, really good.
Yes, they
somebody
are.
Somebody down there told me. So.
Yes, they are. They're very good, and they have appointments for you throughout the game, even after hour after post-game, they're doing haircuts for you. We got the Harris Club. We got the Players Club, the Stadium Club. I mean, a lot of clubs in the arena. Mm-hmm. I enjoy them a lot very much after the game. Because wasn't much basketball to enjoy. You know, he enjoyed the ambiance.
Right, and for Hawks fans, they have to have something else to entice them to come to games, right? Whether
yes.
it's cheap beer or – I really like what they've done in their concession stand pricing, both the Hawks and the Falcons, and make it really affordable, because I think that's also a trend. Because why go pay those extreme prices when I have my giant screen, my free access to the restroom, and cheap beer, right? And so that's one way of trying to change it up and seeing if they can attract that new age customer. And also having plugins and Wi-Fi is another way.
Yes, they're looking forward to coming up to Indianapolis with the Falcons. I think we play you guys at home up there this year. We got Tennessee coming to town to play us in Jacksonville, I think. So I think we're definitely going to be going to Houston and Indy. So I'm looking forward to that trip as well to see Lucas Oil Stadium again. But I tell you what, Scott, it's been very good because last year the fans loved the arena. They didn't care much about the team. They wanted the team to lose, of course, but they enjoyed the arena. It was a very good experience for the players. Everybody came in and enjoyed it as well. And I don't know if you remember or not how the locker room used to be at the other end for the visitors. Now it's mm-hmm. closer towards the loading dock now, so you don't cross the Hawks anymore. I used to be.
That was an awkward circumstance right there, yeah.
Yeah, so now it's that door between you that's close to the loading dock. You go in, you go right out, never see the Hawks unless you want to. So it's definitely changed now, but it's great. I enjoy it. And I'll try to tell Steve Koonin and Mr. Wrestler, how about the All-Star game at Mercedes-Benz Stadium? Let's bid for that. That'll be great. You know,
yeah, I'm not a big fan of basketball in stadiums, specifically talking about the Final Four. That's where I'm not a fan of that.
Oh, yeah, because it's coming to hit.
We did see that in Dallas, right?
Yeah.
What, 5-6 years ago?
Yeah.
And I thought it went over well. I guess more in that I don't mind as much because it's more for the fans. So the more fans that can go, the better. Where I have a challenge with it is the Final Four. When you have a title on the line, and
yes.
now you're not only is it a neutral site, but you're throwing a new environment with 70,000 fans. That's tough for me.
Yes, and we'll be having it 2020 in Atlanta this coming season. It'll be here. So along the Super Bowl and that traffic, which is crazy, we got the Final Four coming as well. So it's going to be a lot of sports in Atlanta. Plus, national championship game was here last year, other year as well. So mm-hmm. I tell you what, man, I enjoy living here because so many big events come here, but the traffic's already bad. It's 20 times worse when it comes to town.
At least you got it. The one thing, too, you got going for you is you got a great airport where you can fly nonstop everywhere. I am jealous of that.
Yes, indeed. You're right about that, man. And you know what? I live by the airport, so I hear the planes coming all the time. So, like, when I hear a plane, it's like, okay, that's a plane. Nothing doesn't bother
mm-hmm.
me. My girlfriend's like, what's that? It's just a plane, babe. It's all good.
Yeah,
That's a plane. You know, let it go. It's just a plane. But, yeah, man, I'm looking forward to it. So, I'm going to give you a call, man. I'm in Indianapolis with the Falcons. Hope you come to the game, see the Falcons play the Colts. I'll definitely hit you up when we come to the Indiana as well, because I travel with the Hawks as well. So I travel with them, so I go on the road with them. So, a lot.
Oh, excellent. Nice.
So hopefully I'll see you when I come up there as well, man.
All right, JR. Good stuff. I like it.
Hey, Scott, you've been great, man. I follow your work on Twitter, man. You do a great job at Athletic, man. Keep up the good work, and thank you for your time. We got to do this again real soon, brother.
Sounds good. Appreciate you. Thanks, JR.
All right, now. It's Scott here on the Bossman Show, people. We'll be right back.